All right, we'll carry on with the meeting and deal with item 10.2 prior to going to public forum. And so page 77 of your agenda or thereabouts, I think it is. So as council is well aware, and welcome, staff. And neither of you two look like Warren. there's a number of government processes open for submission currently, and quite a difficult time during the election process. So, we've had some workshops on all these topics, so we understand the some basics for the theme and the likes, Mrs. Gardner, that we're thinking about. But it's just important to have this discussion and approve some draft submissions with respect to highly productive land, the MPS for urban development, and the action for healthy waterways. With respect to recommendation 4, you'll see that it approves the Chief Executive on or before 5pm on Thursday 17th of October. I would like to suggest an amendment there that we change that to the 30th of October, and that we actually advise or request whatever the appropriate is of MFE that with that extension, and that will allow us to both a little more time to develop our own submission, but also to work with our community catchment groups, stakeholders and the likes to tease out the detail. All right, so I'd like to move recommendation 1, 2B, 3B and 4B, noting the change to the 30th of October. Is that a Friday or a Thursday, Anita? Doesn't matter.
Well, it must be a Wednesday if it's,
regardless, it's
13,
it? Yeah, anyway.
13 days.
Whatever, yeah. we'll plug the appropriate day and change that to the 30th of October. In moving those recommendations, we're approving the attached draft submission on the MPS, I'm reading out 2B at this point, for highly productive land be lodged under the delegation of the ORC. I think it's their ORC submissions, and even though it's a difficult time during the election process. I've moved. Is there a seconder? Councillor Brown.
Yes. I second it. I'd just like to say that I was quite impressed with the submission. I think it was quite positive towards the NPS, which I think it needs to be.
Yes.
And I think
the... Are you talking about the fresh water?
No, so the highly productive land.
Highly productive land, yep. Mm.
And also, I guess my only concern is the ability to map those soils in that time frame. But I was very positive towards the submission.
Righto. Great. Thank you. I saw some other hands up. Councillor Lord.
Thank you. We've had a look at these briefly, and I wanted to questions, in particular with regard to the National Policy Statement on Urban Development that has huge ramifications for Queenstown.
Yes.
Have you had a conversation with Queenstown Lakes District Council about this?
Mrs. Gardner.
I haven't, personally.
I'm not sure that we have.
My question is that because it's such a massive impact, and we are meant to be working in partnership with this, if there are specific issues or concerns that they have that we can help them on, it may be very in the market situation for a partnership to actually undertake those conversations, at least to have a chance to be heard. In particular, I'm really worried about our point that we're against the car parking and provisions of public transport section, where we've sought to exempt from the car parking requirements. I think unless we've had a conversation with Queenstown Lakes, because we have the likes of our transport plans with them, may actually be disempowering them from being able to progress some of their own desires around their transport system. I think that's a really big leap to take without that conversation. I would be completely against it. I know, having worked through the district plan, they've tried to keep those the small amount of land that they've got from being built up as car parks.
So if I can...
I'm not going to move to change it, but I am going to ask that there is a conversation with Queensland Lakes District Council, particularly about that.
Yeah, we'll share it.
Can I just address that through you, Mr. Chair? So, please excuse, I've got a childhood illness at 40. So we have had some conversations or been in the room with Queenstown. So Peter Winder was at the MFE session with Queenstown, and they've had these conversations in general. We've also tried to lodge a joint submission, but we couldn't get all the council meetings to align to make that happen. The car parking exemption, so what the MPS is trying to do is remove the requirement to provide car parking. And what we're saying is for Queenstown, it's a different modal operation than the other TAs in that there's not a lot of alternatives to public transport currently available. So what we're saying is it might still be appropriate, at least in the short term, for Queenstown to require car parking with developments as opposed to not requiring it.
Good point. Yep. Councillor Scott?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate just everything that's just been said, because I've been through both submissions. Mm-hmm. Are we talking about both?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been through both, and I actually agreed with the general tenor, except for that car parking one, because, I mean, for goodness sake, it seems to me when I visit Queenstown, it's completely, you know, log-jammed with cars, as it is now, let alone, you know, provisions for potentially for more car parking, And we've got a key role in that. And we're going to talk later on today about other possibilities, public transport. And I think if Dunedin can talk about less car parks, then Queenstown certainly can. Thank you.
All right, point noted. Councillor Laws.
We had a discussion before about when we were in a workshop about what we're going to do. Is it possible, with your indulgence, Stephen, but also with our colleagues, that we add that bit, a recommendation that our submissions on the above issues also be shared with all the region's members of Parliament, both constituency and list? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's. I mean, I think we can just note that and have it as an action rather than record it as a recommendation.
Well, it's not a recommendation. It's a,
no,
it's a motion.
Righto.
What about just putting it on a website?
Well, it's just that don't we want it to go to... We do, don't we? Yes, we do. So we why wouldn't we just send it to them with a covering letter?
Okay. What I'm saying is we can do that without having a recommendation. I think that's something we just agree at this table in a minute that will ensure that we...
Cool. We
seek it. And I think it needs to be wider than that, because, and that's the reason I mentioned the Catchment Gootstown community in general, with respect to the 30th of October, and we share it as widely as possible so they understand what our views are, and that might assist some develop their submissions as with respect to the freshwater.
So through you, Mr. Chair, we've already had some specific requests from a particular gentleman in Cromwell, Bannockburn area, that represents the wine growers and a few other organisations, and we've committed to sharing with them. We've got no issue. It's in the public arena now because it's part of this document. There's nothing secretive in it.
No.
So no issues at all with doing that and making a deliberate decision to share it with the TAs and things like that.
Yes.
Fine.
Yep. And a number of us have had contact from various people around there. All right, so we can share that as we develop that, and you have some new people to share it with after October the 12th. All righty, any other further questions? comfortable with that. So we've moved recommendations 1 and 2B, 3B and 4B. Comfortable with that. It's been moved and seconded. I'm going to put it all in favour. Please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. All right. We'll now move to public forum. And we'll start with Mr. Dowden and ask you to come forward. And I understand we are going to receive a petition. Join us down the end of the table, Peter, please. Join us down the end of the table where there's a microphone. So we can hear you. Understand the rules of public forum. And 5 minutes, and there might be some points of clarification from councillors. So
well, I have a point of clarification, which is, although I'm organising the presentation of this petition, I'm not speaking.
Right.
I'd like to invite, I think it's Philip and Peter and Sonia. They were going to make this representation to the council.
Righto, great.
Yeah.
Philip, Peter and Sonia, if you'd like to join us. So welcome, and I'll ask you, you're going to share the presentation?
Yes.
So we do have some rules around public forum, and it is 5 minutes. It's not 5 minutes each. I understand you're all talking on the one topic. So welcome, we're in your hands.
Can I just ask, is there also time for questions?
Yes, points of clarification. We don't get into a debate, or there might be a point of clarification from a councillor. In your hands.
Yeah, where do I? I can't see you.
Mate, yeah, speaking to the microphone.
Speaking. Simple, yeah. Okay. Still not going, sorry. The red light is on. Okay. Can you hear me now?
No, just Mr. Donnelly might help you.
Oh, thank you.
There it is.
How's
great.
That? Yep. Yeah, right. Okay. O tēnā koutou katoa, nā mihi ki te ropu nei, kua hui mai ki te whakarongo, ki te kōrero, ana a te hāpori nei. Kei te tukute mihi hoki ki ngā tangata whenua o te rohi nei o ngā hapu katoa o Arai Te Uru. Right? Ka huri au ki te reo Pākehā nane. My name is Sonia Mitchell. I'm an organiser with First Union. I'm here with a group of bus drivers and supporters, other contractors for council, but primarily we're here to talk about the bus drivers and about the pay that they're under and that they're working under here in Dunedin. And I'm a bit nervous. I think we probably all are. I'm not so used to talking to these
folks. You're fine, Sonia. Just relax.
Okay. All right. So firstly, just to acknowledge the work that the Regional Council does, kei te tuku te mihi ki tā koutou mahi uaua, ko tō koutou mahi nui hoki. So a mihi to your important and difficult work. I know you are often hearing from different groups with different points of view, and that you're sort of balancing interests a lot of the time, yeah? And personally don't envy you that job at all, yeah? We're a group that's come forward today to try and give a voice to, I think, workers who are not always so well heard in New Zealand and in Dunedin generally. I think business interests tend to have more capacity to come to these sorts of forums, and often do. So this is a rare chance, I think, for you to hear directly from workers, so I'll hush up in a minute. but first, just wanted to say, please kind of put on your listening ears to this rare chance to hear directly from workers. And please, I know that one of your roles as a council is to think about the interests of your community. And I know often there's pressure to think about the interests of your ratepayers, yeah, and your citizens. And I guess I would urge you to think about part of your citizens are your workforce here in Dunedin, their families, yeah. So all of the workers who work for the Regional Council, all of the bus drivers who work for you and under your contracts, they are part of our community in Dunedin. They have families here. What they earn determines how they can live, how much they can participate in local democracy, how much they can contribute to the economy, if that's your main focus, but how much they can actually just do. So I know a lot of you have expressed support for workers and for bus drivers, and some of you directly to me, and I thank you. I know on the City Council we have had a heck of a lot of support, and you'll be aware that the City Council has recently signed up to being a living wage employer. So the Dunedin City Council has shown its support for workers as part of this Dunedin community, and we're asking the Otago Regional Council to do the same and pay workers a living wage, including all contractors. So I'll hand over now to Peter.
I'm one of the bus drivers that I started 2 years ago, and I'm getting paid about $18 an hour driving a bus around Dunedin streets. We get abused. We don't need to take this. We shouldn't need to take this. We're a public transport company. And we're just going around. We've got a lot of liability on our buses. Class 2 drivers and Class 4 drivers get more than us. I do up to 65 to 70 hours a week. Don't see my family. I'm actually at home late at night. Get up early in the morning, head to work. So we need something done. We need a better wage for us.
Can I just ask, Peter, do you get paid any overtime above the sort of 40 hours you do? You get the same 18, 25 an hour.
Yep. That's it.
Have we got more time?
Yes. No.
I'm here on behalf also of the Tramways Union for the support of all our members for the living wage. And that's the main thing we've come here for, to promote that we get the living wage as part of the community and for you to help us out. And that I will not going to muck around. That's what we need.
Right.
So we got in under 5 minutes?
Close.
Oh.
So, yes, well, let's go to points of clarification for a start off, and I might get, I'll respond, and Mrs. Gardner might want to respond too. Councillor Lawton?
Thank you so much for coming along today on a really important issue. And mostly people don't understand how I was hoping that could highlight what would actually need to happen through our procurement policy to enable us to set something like a wage. And it's really important that the public hears this.
As you will have seen recently, it was recently reported, we pay everyone who works at council a living wage. But in order to go the next step and do the accreditation as a living wage employer, that of course brings in contractors. There is a time frame around that, but it does bring in contractors. And before we were to make that step, we would need to understand better what that would mean in terms of the cost of those services and those contracts to council and how they would be delivered. Would also mean that we would have to look at our contracts and do contract variations. So it's not a simple process. It's certainly not that I said I wouldn't do it, but simply that we hadn't considered that next step right now because of the process we would need to undertake. Not because, we don't understand that earning a living wage is something that's important. So
you also include the government's role in that? Is that
yes, that's right.
That has criteria
yes.
that our contracts need to meet.
That's yes. right. Yes, so governance do that. We have a procurement policy. There are criteria that need to be met. There are a number of those, and that would need to be modified. And then if there was any additional funding or expenditure as a result of decisions made for the accreditation of the organisation, we then have to come back and find a way to fund that. And because largely you would expect that those costs would be passed through to us as the people who pay for the service. And that has to come from ratepayers. So that has to go through a full council process and be considered as part of an annual plan process or a long-term plan process.
Right. Councillor Scott, then I'll come back to Councillor Neil.
Yeah, but just to the clarification. Nevertheless, so there's a process, but if this table decided to adopt that policy of the living wage, then that process would be instigated, as hard as it may be, as much time as it may take, but nevertheless, can it happen? Yes, it can. And
yes,
correct?
That's exactly right. And what I'm saying is we haven't got the next step yet, because we would need to understand the full implications of that.
Yeah.
And bring that to you as advice in order for you to be comfortable with making a decision.
Yeah. And, and one thing I don't know is a point of clarification. You said that that would be funded by ratepayers. I don't know what percentage ratepayers would have to pay, what percentage bus users would have to pay, and what percentage NZTA may need.
Exactly.
You may find that ratepayers only have to pay 25% of it.
Yes, that is possibly true in this case, but of course, if we sign up to living wage accreditation, we're not just signing up for buses. We're signing up for contractors to...
That comes down to the... That
so it's the cleaner, it's...
No, no,
it's
that comes
person.
Down to... that comes right. down to the governance... clarification. That comes down to the governance policy that's adopted. It might be just for buses.
Yeah.
And, and my question is, so the living wage is 21... What actually is the living wage?
It's 21.15, I think. Is that right?
That's right. Yes.
Okay, yep. Thank you.
All right, Councillor Neil.
I certainly don't think you paid enough. I've pushed for it before, but I had a bus brother, a bus driver, so I felt I had a vested interest in it, and I didn't say too much, but I'm perfectly happy to say now that you're not damn well paid anywhere near enough.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. No further points of clarification. That's it. We're out of time, sorry. And so, but I do want to say thank you, and thank you for your supporters who have turned up today.
Can we ask a question of clarification of Ms. Gardner?
No, we ask points that way, and there will be things to follow up that as a result of this, I'm sure. And your point's been well made. It's very clear. But we're not in a position today to start negotiating and discussing the details. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, just if that work gets initiated, we hope that will be, hopefully it's already started, because it's a sort of obvious need, and we're happy to help if it helps speed up the process. I'm not sure, the City Council seems to have done it in a short space of time, so, yeah.
Yep, note your offer.
Thank you.
So, anyway, I just to complete that, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for coming along, and appreciate your presentations today. You do have a petition, is that right?
Yes, that's already been
We've
by
received.
The
so we'll note. Yeah. We'll note. We've received a petition, and appreciate your time.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is Mike in there? Yes, he is. I can see him moving. All right. All the best, councillors. Councillor Scott. Councillors, order, please. Bloody deaf. All right. We do have a second public forum, and Mr. Mike Hemp is in the office at Frankton on the left-hand side of your screen. Mike, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Great. Can you make sure you speak into the microphones in front of you? I can hear you, but you're off in the distance a bit. Sound like you're in a big room. So, yeah, that's better.
Is that better?
Yeah, a wee bit.
I'll move.
Just make sure you speak up.
Turn your lights on.
Turn the lights on?
Yeah, no,
turn
it's just a bit cheeky. Don't worry.
Turn the lights on.
Oh, it's all right, Mike. There you go.
Okay.
Righto, we're in
your hands. I'm always in the dark out here, that's why.
All right, welcome, Mike. We're in your hands.
Thank you very much. First of all, for anyone who don't know, I'm chairman of Friends of Lake Hayes here in Lake Hayes. thank you, firstly, for all the support we've been getting. Things have changed a lot in the last 2 years, and we appreciate LRC support, and I won't go through all that today. But why I'm here today is just to make sure on the outlet discussion that's about to happen after this talk that you hear, I'd just like you to hear, we'll make sure you've heard our side of the story. To give you an idea, the flooding of Lake Hayes we're talking about started in July last year, and the walking tracks affected the marathon 6 months later. So we're talking about a problem that provides 6 months worth of flooding at a time. Creates heaps of organic rotting matter. It stinks. Not to mention the effects on the health of the lake. There's a whole lot of things there. And also the habitat is affected in terms of the rare crested grebe, which need a stable habitat to survive and to breed. So the community has indicated to me regularly, and I take a lot of the pressure, I don't feed it all back to you, that we have a problem and we need to resolve this somehow. So from our perspective, the 1995 Lake Hayes Management Strategy exists in section 5.4.1. You can read it for yourself. It's very important to keep steady lake level in Lake Hayes. In 2004, Transit realigned the road. Obviously, they needed a new culvert, so they consented a new culvert. And for some reason, instead of putting back what was there, we put back something different. Now, pre-2004, just to give you an idea, the old system was working very well. We went through a 1-in-100-year flood in 1999, and there was hardly any movement in the lake. So the system definitely worked. So we have evidence for that. So I know Transit own the culvert, but by consenting for new design, I think ORC took responsibility that the risks associated with changing something so sensitive in that. And as Gavin Bunnell will say to you, the kind of hydrology around culverts and the back pressures and the height of the lake and the change in the shape and all these things, it's an extremely complex subject. And I'll be the first one to say it's probably very easy to get wrong. So I'm not quite sure why we changed the design. So at the end of that, that's really all I've got to say, other than we're looking for all parties to get together somehow and come up with a plan. I'm not asking for immediate answers. All I want to know is that we've got a plan in place to fix this problem. Now, you might say, well, okay, it's only happened in the last, not that often in the last few years, but it would be a very brave person to say that we're not going to get more of these rain events in the current climatic change environment. So that's all I have to say today. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mike. Are there any points of clarifications from councillors? Councillor Scott.
Thank you. Is it an option to raise the level of the track?
It's not about the level of the track. It's about keeping the lake at the same height. If you look at the issues are about erosion and then and the ingress of phosphorus. If the change in lake would kill off the breeding population, because those birds create rafts, so one of the key factors for breeding grebes is having a stable lake height, which is why they've thrived there. It's one of the reasons they're thriving. So, yes, you could change the lake, but the problem isn't actually the height, it's actually the change in height.
Hi, Kinsella here. Hey, just in terms of the variation in the lake level, we've got some suggestion here that it's really only been the last 12 months that we've seen a variation in that lake level. Is that true?
Well, if you have a look at the weather patterns, that's the first change weather pattern. We had actually a stable weather pattern for a period, and that's unusual, but that's what happened. So it's really saying that looking forward, can you accept that it's not going to happen again, is really what we're saying consistently, given the change in climate.
All right. Thank you. Councillor Noon.
Mike, I just want to ask a question about the, you mentioned about the habitat being impacted. If the lake level was lower, would there be any other habitat impact, i.e. any ecological impact further upstream, wetlands, that type of thing?
So no, well, it's not going to be lower. It's going to be at the same level, back to where it sits. It's this level it sat at for a long time.
Does it answer your question?
No. All I'm if the lake, let's just say the lake was lower, because you talked about the culvert process determining that went through a ORC consent and it was determined to be at a certain size. One of the reasons why it was a certain size was that to ensure that there weren't ecological impacts on what exists upstream. And all I'm saying, are you aware that there are any, could potentially be impacts if the lake level was lower than it currently is? Any impacts on the ecology?
Well, we're asking for the design to be put back that was there, that was replaced actually, so there's no risk then, because you understand that. We want to go back to what it was.
Councillor Lawton, one last.
Just one follow-up question. Just as the chair of Friends of Lake Hayes, Mike, were you aware of ORC carrying out these investigations earlier in the year around the culvert? Had you been spoken to as a group of community partners?
Yes, I was aware. There has been communication. I knew that there was a study done on the outlet site. There's no.
Okay.
But that was about looking at whether there was any impediments on the other side that had developed in the meantime to make sure that the water was getting away.
Right. Did you have a conversation about what was going to happen with that information after it had been...
No, I've only just got this information on culvert size in the last week.
Right. Okay.
I've been trying to find that out, but I haven't asked the question directly myself, so it's not a problem of I wasn't given anything. It was... I've only just really started to get involved deeply because things weren't progressing.
All right, Councillor Bell.
Yeah, Mike, what size culvert is the preferred culvert that you think?
We're not technical experts.
Good answer.
I don't think we should be designing culverts, but, you know, so... I'm leaving that to you. I'm saying... You knew what was there and how it worked. That's what needs to go back. And it's not about only... You could put a huge culvert in there, but it wouldn't make any difference because it would be deeper rather than shallower. So there's a lot of constraints there as well. But you should... you know, what we're saying is we just want to bring the performance the same height as it was and to make sure that it flows out during these events.
All right.
No,
thanks,
it's
Mike.
About measuring the effect on the lake level, not on the effect of the culvert.
Thanks, Mike. You've been very clear. So, yeah, appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
I'm not sure how you're off for time, but I'm going to go to a number of other items before we come back to this item on the agenda. You're most welcome to stay online if that suits.
Thank you very much.
Righto. Thank you.
How long do you think that will be?
Oh.
2 days.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, there'll be a decision. If you're not able to wait, there'll be a decision from the paper and in due course, and I can't give you an accurate time, so I'm not even going to try and take a stab. I'm sorry, Mike.
No, that's fine. I've got time. I'm patient, man.
Yeah, good on you. Righto. Thank you for your public forum.
Thank you.
All right. Yes, can you just mute your microphones so just until we get... Well, how will he know when we get to the item?
Yeah.
Oh, well, righto. All right, we'll now move on to item 10.5 in our agenda, which is our annual report, page 138 in your agenda. And I welcome Mr. Donnelly, Mr. Benham, Chair of Audit and Risk, Heidi, and Scott from Deloitte, our auditors. Can you join us at the table, please?
What page are we on?
138 on your agenda is the report, I think. I'm correct in saying that, aren't I? Yes, I am. Welcome. All right. We're all familiar with this process. This is our annual report. There's been several reports over the last two meeting cycles coming to Finance and Corp that start to build the information that is presented here in the annual report. The annual report was through Audit and Risk last week, and so I'll just firstly ask Mr. Donnelly to give a quick introduction, and then I'll hand to Mr. Benham, and then we'll ask Hayley to make some comments from the auditor's perspective, and then open the paper up for general discussion. Mr. Donnelly, an introduction, please.
Yeah, just a quick introduction, because I'm sure Mr. Benham is going to give a bit more of a rundown about what Audit and Risk has been doing and the annual report itself. But as the Chair said, the draft of the annual report went to Audit and Risk last week. There was still some outstanding items that had to be finalised since then, so they were substantially made in the version that went out to councillors on Friday, and then some final changes post comments from the Auditor and the Office of the Auditor General were made over the weekend, and that's now the version that you have in front of you. There was also some final checks and balances, so the final copy that we've got here that assuming Council adopts the annual report does have a couple of just minor corrections to some of the numbers, you know, brackets where one some missing and of those nature, but nothing substantial from the version that's in the agenda today. As the paper notes, it has the statement of service performance at the front and the financial statements at the back, and both of those have been to the previous council meeting. The activity report, which is substantially the statement of service performance, was tabled then, and the draft financial statements were tabled at that meeting as well. And then since then, we've gone through the process of finalisation, and the auditors have done their audit over the top of that.
Right. Thank you. Mr. Benham, welcome.
Thank you, and good afternoon, councillors. Good to be here. The Audit and Risk, as you've heard, reviewed in detail the annual report last week, and as Nick has outlined, bar a few minor changes, that was the document that we saw and is placed before you on behalf. Well, I place that before you on behalf of the Audit and Risk Committee today. Nick has commented on a couple of the issues around the statements of service performance that caused some concern about, and also noted in the report around some of those areas that were not achieved or partially achieved. Since the meeting last week, the Chairman and the Chief Executive's report is in the document, which I've read, and I think that is an extensive forward as an explanation around a number of those issues, and I'm pretty sure designed to inform the public as to why some of those areas were not achieved, and I'm sure as councillors you'd be aware of those reasons. In terms of financial results, I guess as you can see, once again, probably when I come here each time, I comment what a strong balance sheet you have. Clearly, a large part of that is consolidation of the port company, but notwithstanding that, there is total equity of $680 million and no debt. So a very strong, strong balance sheet, and I guess there's been a significant impact in this year and in past years with the port revaluation in terms of the numbers as you see going forward. Just a quick comment from me around investment returns. You see that those haven't been too bad in this year, but as was pointed out to the Audit and Risk Committee by the investment advisors, there's a few headwinds out there in that space with interest rates significantly lower and lowering, bond rates similarly down, and equities pretty well priced, if not overpriced. So in terms of future returns, it was highlighted to us that, you know, there are potentially some headwinds going forward in those returns. Commented on the port value increase, and you've seen that on some 40-odd million. So really that was all I wished to say around the annual report, but just a couple of quick comments in review of the Audit and Risk Committee through the year. This is my opportunity, I guess, as chair of that committee to briefly review that for you. I guess we've covered the usual areas in this last year in health and safety, around and looking at investment reporting from the advisors, also some legislative compliance, various audit matters, discussions with the auditors, insurance renewals, and of course the annual report form the basis of the work. I guess the other part that was good to see this year, I think, is the further development in the council around risk and risk management and risk reporting. And I think that, you know, it's had a bit of a rocky start, but I think we're making good progress on that, and the reporting is looking pretty good now. And I guess the essence of that is ensuring that that's understood by the management here as well, and indeed as well into their thinking and thought processes. The other major thing that occurred during the year was the tender process for the investment manager. We went through an extensive process with that late last year, and the decision was unanimously, I think, to change from the BNZ to JB Weir. We had a presentation from JB Weir to the Audit and Risk Committee last week, and it was a very interesting and informative presentation. And I think in talking to the Chief Executive, I think it'd be useful if they were to give the whole council an update at various times just about what's happening in the world economy, the New Zealand economy, and where your investment piece fits in that. That's really all that I'd wish to say at this point, Mr. Chairman, but just to reiterate, the Audit and Risk endorses the annual report for your approval.
Thank you, Mr. Benham. All right, Heidi, we'll just ask you to comment on behalf of the auditors, please, at this point.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. Look, I just want to reiterate Mr. Dolly and Mr. Benham's comments that the annual report that was provided to you earlier this week, and what's in front of you, is the position that we intend to provide an unmodified opinion on. That is subject to just Council's final adoption of that annual report and signing of the representation letter. Yeah.
Right. Thank you. All right, before I open it up for discussion, Councillor Brown, are you happy to move the recommendations as circulated? That received the report, approves and adopts annual report and financial statements for the year to the 30th of June 2019 and authorises the Chairperson and Chief Executive to sign the representation letter on behalf of Council. Moved Councillor Brown, seconded Councillor Noon. All right, open that up for discussion. Councillor Scott.
Thank you. Thank you for this report. I must say that I've seen more red dots at the start of this report than I've seen for a while. So much, in fact, that I had to go relook at the table and just remind myself, what does red dot actually stand for? And it stands for a target that's not been achieved. And like the first one is in relation to complying with Resource Management Act legislative planning requirements, not achieved. The next one, the regional pest plan management plan is appropriately developed and implemented. Not achieved. After saying that, we had a good step today, acknowledged.
This is 30 June, of course.
Assessments are carried out to determine the water quality meeting of achieving the various limits, and water continues to meet these limits and improved. Not achieved. Lake Snow, not achieved. You know, like, I think we all need to agree here and now that, you know, this council needs to do better. We need to look at our approach and the strategies, ideally simplify some of our strategies, standardise some of our strategies, and I think we're taking that on board. Yes, Ms. Gardner? Yeah, we're taking that on board. And also at the same time to work constructively on the ground with our communities. On the positive side, thank you for the honesty.
Absolutely.
for the honesty, because I've been rabbiting on about this for years, particularly in relation to water quality. Didn't seem to matter what was actually happening on the ground. We were getting green and amber lights, and here we've had honesty, a reality check. And I think on that basis, this council is turning the corner, has turned the corner in terms of delivery, and whoever's on the council for the next 3 years has got an important 3 years to continue that momentum. There's some big challenges. That's what I've got to say, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. Actually, a question to start with. Sorry for the...
Lady, yep.
Lady, thank you. Sorry. For most councils,
I'm the appointed auditor for two councils. I'm probably not in a position to comment on that. In terms of the annual report, I'm responsible for reporting particularly around that service performance in relation to your actual performance relative to your intended performance, and then where you've got differences for the reasonings behind those. It's not really my position to comment on the intended delivery of that actual report.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll take it back to the council. We have brought this up a number of times before. In our employment committee, we've talked about having better measurements and understanding of the well-being of our staff. In conversations about our carbon footprint, we've talked about possibly measuring that and reporting on it, so therefore requiring structures in place in our own council to measure and monitor that. It is a general shift in the business world to have integrated reporting, to look beyond just financial measures for your organisation. We've certainly talked on and off about it, and what I'd like to propose to, in addition to this recommendation as part D, is that as a council we direct that the CE prepares a report to investigate the use of integrated reporting or triple bottom line reporting for council in the next annual report. Don't actually make a recommendation on this today, we are going to get to the next annual plan before, or next annual report before we get an opportunity to have this discussion. If what we do is have that included in our recommendation, we provide the next council with a chance to at least explore what that looks like and whether or not it has value for us as an organisation. We certainly have spoken at length about understanding better our staff well-being, and this is a way of ensuring that we are measuring and monitoring the right indices, indicators to then provide that information in our annual report.
All right. So I'll take that as a second or a separate recommendation, because it's not actually to do with this annual report. We've got the current recommendations moved and seconded. It might be something you pick up after we've moved those recommendations through. But in the way of comment, and Mrs. Gardner might want to flesh this out a little bit more, the current financial year we're in, which will drive the annual report this time next year, already has the measures in place. And set, so it might be for building the LTP, perhaps, when these sorts of conversations would need to be occurred, because you'd be starting it by setting your targets. Then that follows up on what can be reported against in the annual report.
To a certain extent, however, unless it's also indicated here, how do we then get some information to then provide the discussion at the next stage. So, because I've been trying to have this put as a part of opportunity for discussion, an informed discussion, which I've so far failed, and I'm trying to at least provide a basis for the discussion to happen, which we haven't had to this time.
So Gadd, are you able to comment at this point, or
I guess you don't have to? No, I'm actually not really in a position to comment holistically. However, what I would say is I'm not sure that triple bottom line reporting equates to reporting on staff welfare. I'm not sure that they're the same things. Because in my understanding, if you were to want, if you incorporated triple bottom line, which is social, economic, etc., then this is a report about what the organisation has delivered for the community. It's not necessarily a report into the nuts and bolts and operational bits and pieces of the organisation. So I'm not sure that what you're asking for necessarily belongs here. But it's not a question that, you know, that I've had any time to consider. So
where would it be great for you to then answer, where would that sit? And where would it be transparent for our community to understand by a community-owned organisation?
Well, again, it's not a conversation that I was prepared for. So, but what I would say is that I think it's important to think about in the context of the question about what's governance and what's necessary from a governance point of view and what's operational and what's my responsibility. So I see staff wellbeing, which is the thing that you highlighted, as being my responsibility as the employer of the staff of the organisation, not your responsibility as governors, other than to assess me in the job that I'm doing, which you have done already this year.
How do we assess you if we've got no measures?
Well, I think it's a completely different conversation to the conversation we're having now.
That's true.
Yeah. Right, we'll move on. Councillor Kempton.
You know, I'd just like to make a comment about Councillor Lawton's thinking. Integrated reporting is the flip side of traditional, you know, balance sheet and shareholder value style reporting, for want of a better term. And the organisation looks at itself in an entirely different way. And some quite sophisticated organisations in New Zealand now report to their shareholders in a very much different way to what they did. And the best example would be New Zealand Post. But in any event, what I think is really important is that it is governance that decides what style of reporting it wants from management. But I think it's really important that there is some understanding gained on the integrated reporting process, and we already have our pillars, and so they're kind of a starting point for this thing, and that comes back to the new council to say, if you want integrated reporting, this is what it will look like, these are the upsides, and they may well include the sorts of things you're talking about, Ella. But I think at the moment, around the council table and around the new council table, will be very little understanding of the difference between traditional reporting and integrated reporting. And I wonder, and I'm just putting in a wee plug here, in November, there's a one-day course by IOD in Dunedin about integrated reporting. If a staff member went to that, had a look at it, came back, had some discussion, and then it was put to council to say, we could turn the way we report, flip it over, and we could get these things out of it, and some of them will be the things you're talking about, Alan, and then take it from there. But I think there's a very limited understanding of the two disciplines, or the difference between the two disciplines. I mean, never mind the IOD, that was just a wee plug, but gather some information on it, put it in front of council, and say, here's the difference, what do you like? But there is a significant, and it is a finely staged process of introduction, and it's quite a significant amount of work. But
Yeah. We'll come back and get to that.
Well enough, but thanks,
Councillor Laws.
Yes, a couple of things. First of all, I think I'd like to endorse Councillor Scott's comments about honest appraisals. Always the best ones. But then that leads to the next question, so what's the remedy? If it's red, what's the remedy? And I think we need to address that bit, Stephen. Well, you know, if we are failing, great, we've identified that we've failed, but how are we gonna make that better? And I'm not sure that we've got that in the annual report mechanism yet. I've read the comments at the bottom of each page, but I don't know that that necessarily encapsulates the solution to how you're going to make things better. You'll be able to tell me a little bit more. We raised at the audit and risk staffing costs. If you read our annual report, we've actually reduced the number of full-time staff. Now, that seems oxymoronic, doesn't it, compared to the work that we've done, but we have. The reason is because we've employed more consultants, and there isn't that mechanism in our annual report to report separately along what are our consultants doing. Forgive me to the audit and risk, but to Gretchen and to Stephen, but I think there's a general acceptance that if you can work out some staffing issues from how you report your consultants and where those consultants work in. So I just wanted to flag that we need that reported in next year's annual report. I think, David, you would agree with that. Is that right?
Yeah, we discussed that at the audit and risk, and I think Chief Executive's going to looking at how that might occur.
Yeah. It's a great way of DHBs working out, for example, if they need to appoint new specialist personnel. And we're now heading into a specialist era with our own staff. So it is a really good mechanism by which governance can look over the shoulder of the chief executive and say, hey, wait on. So it's a sort of a monitoring. Third one is this. I looked at the, I think we also need to do, and can I just say, we need to probably have a look again, it's just been raised, I think, by Ella, about the mechanisms by which we measure. If you have a look under pests on page 20, for example, they've got all green lights. You look at our annual report, you go, oh, well, there you go. You know, now, rabbit's got a green light against that one. We all know there's a massive infestation. Are we really using the right measurements in our annual report to effectively see what we've done over the past 12 months and are we making an impact? So I just wanted to flag those things with you. I think we can improve this annual report in those three measurement areas.
So just again, responding to your last point, it's about the standard, the target you set in the annual plan. So to go to the front end of the process that ends up getting reported on. I saw a hand somewhere, Councillor Robertson.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment as well on the work that has gone into the annual plan, first of all, which has been immense, I know, and it's been challenging at times, and thank you for the robustness of the process. We're going through a little bit of a transition in our capability and project management and a number of other areas. But I think, nevertheless, I actually think this is pretty damn successful annual report. There are some, there's a deficit there. It's a little bit higher than we anticipated, but for reasons that aren't really surprises and regarding timing of projects that we knew were going to extend into this financial year around bus hub, around flood schemes, things like that. But I want to touch on statement of service performance, which is getting a bit of a hammer in there, and there are some red dots, but it is good to actually look at them too, and especially at the front end, that first one in policy of not complying with the RMA, that's a little bit of a shocker, but is at face value is around the RPS, and what was a bit of a shock decision too, that our RPS in its entirety by the judge ruling didn't meet the Part 2 of the Act, so that was not what was anticipated, but nevertheless it's there, and with black and white saying that that was the ruling, the work was done, and we have in place, how do we remedy that? We will be doing a new RPS as part of the National Planning Standards in the next 3 years. So, there's plans there to remedy that. The pest plan wasn't done on time, but what did become operative today, and I'm proud of the robust process that we went through. I don't think it could have been pushed through any faster, so I think the community got a better outcome for the fact that there was enough consultation and enough time to consider the submissions. Then we've got that we didn't monitor water quality with regards to the limit set in the regional plan. But if you read that, it says we actually did do the monitoring. But other aspects of science work needed to support regional planning, which is a big beast at the moment, as we all understand. There's other areas that we need to be investing in, but the actual monitoring was done. So, yeah, there's that one. And then there's the Lake Snow one, which is also to look at managing the effects of Lake Snow on water quality. Now, the effects are the adverse effects that are being caused, and often that is, as well as us, a TA issue, especially with water intakes and things. So the response is to a decision on a coordinated approach between councils, which sounds extremely sensible too. So, how do we remedy all these? Well, we've actually got things in train. I think we're in a really strong position. We're in a very strong financial position, as we all know, and that doesn't just happen. But actually, it's not doom and gloom. We have been getting on with the work. We need to invest further in the work, as we know, but this is a good annual report. Measures and how we design them, and Councillor Lawton talked about that. We could design them in a different way, and we could stretch our minds to it being a better way, and I think actually the auditor has talked to us about that in the past, and again this year, that as a council we can get better yet at designing what those measures are. And we're, our ears are open to that, and I know that through the next annual plan, the council will look at ensuring the measures are good ones. But yeah, overall, I'm really happy with this report. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Robertson. Councillor Brown?
Yeah, I just like to agree with those comments. I think this annual report is very comprehensive, and we acknowledge that, you know, some deficiencies in some area, but I think the word transition is the appropriate word here. This council is a council in transition, and we've got a lot of work to do going forward. So, all in all, and probably the other thing, once if you read this chair/CEO report at the start, that sort of sums everything up, and it's not a great read as a document for the person in the street, but to read that initially, it does give a good summation of where this council's got to in the past year. So, well done.
Thank you. Everybody else comfortable? All right. I'm going to put the two recommendations we've got moved in second, and then I'll come back to you, Councillor Lawton. And so that is, we receive this report, approves and adopts the annual report, and then authorises the Chair and Chief Executive to sign the representation letter. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Councillor Lawton, can you reread your recommendation before I seek a seconder? Everybody clear on that? Second to Councillor Scott. Any discussion? Councillor Brown?
Oh, yeah, I just have a bit of a problem with the understanding of it, particularly if you give this to a new council. What exactly does it mean?
Well, it's asking, Mrs. Gardner, are you clear on the question? Because there's a...
So, what I understand from triple bottom line reporting is that you would look at measures around our success for the environment, but also our success for the community, so social success and economic success.
Integrated reporting is slightly different to triple bottom line reporting.
Okay, yes. So I wrote triple bottom line, which was what you had initially said, so
yeah,
you might want to...
one better step, but as was discussed, integrated reporting is best practice at current.
Hold on.
It's just prepare a paper, isn't it, Ella?
It is. It's asking the Chief Executive to do some research,
yeah.
and it would be part of the conversation that would lead into the building of an annual plan.
Yeah.
Or the long-term plan.
It can only be a benefit.
Yeah. Well, Councillor Brown's nodding his head now. All right.
Can we add How do you remedy the Reds as part of that? But
no, it's a different topic, and I think we've covered that.
We can talk about it for a week if you want. Yeah,
and, we're not talking about it for a week. But all right, Liz, you've captured those words.
Direct the Chief Executive to prepare a report for Council on the value of using integrated report approach to annual reports and how to transition ORC to using this approach going forward.
Yeah. Everybody's clear, it's been moved and seconded, we've had some debate.
Right. Okay.
I'll put it, all in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hayden Scott. And Mr Donnelly and Mr Benham, you can just stay put if you like, and I'm going to leap over several items in the agenda. And while Mr Benham's here and at the table, go to item 10.9, Statement of Investment Policies and Objectives, SIPO in other words. Page 359 on your agenda. So we're all over the place a wee bit today. Apologies, it's just the way it's worked out. And yes, we do need to talk about this, but we can be as brief as you wish. So I'll just introduce the paper for a start off. So JB Weir, as Mr Donnelly has already pointed out, reported to us. It was their first report since being appointed as investment managers. At the time we appointed them, they did identify that they would be coming back to us at some point with some feedback on the SIPO. Just making some tweaks there. And they made it very clear, Mr Benham, the other day, and I'll ask you to comment in a minute, that with the current position in the markets, in the financial markets, you referred to it earlier in your report, and safety, we're looking at public money and the ability to respond if the market does move, that is one of the reasons they're looking at changing some of the parameters here, in particular the cash, where it was 3 to 7%, and they're asking to go from 0 to 25%, and that is around protecting our assets if things turn to custard in the market. We thought with the financial setting and timing politically, it was appropriate to bring this paper immediately to Council on the route, picking up JB Weir's recommendations. Mr Donnelly
Mr Chairman, I think you've outlined what JB Weir put to us. To me, these are very sensible recommendations, certainly. The movement in the cash range, really that's a defensive mechanism that you probably read, that there's all sorts of people in the market predicting dire things to the market. This allows the manager to move quite quickly to head towards a greater range available in cash. That's really the main change. I'll let Nick talk a little bit more about the hedging side of it, but the main one to me is that cash range, and I think that's a very sensible suggestion. The others are kind of just little tidies up in terms of the other allocations. But
yeah. Mr Donnelly.
Hedging.
The asset allocations is the key thing. One of the other things, there is some other sort of just minor administrative changes that we've made. But they also recommend actually have a 0 to 100% hedging range on international equities that the SIPO has had in there since we modified it, which was back in 2016, that international equities would be 50% hedged. They haven't been, so it hasn't been an issue. JB Weir, that was one of the things that they had highlighted when they went through the tender process, that they'd want to extend that so that they'll make the decision on whether they hedge the international equities or not. At the moment, they wouldn't because of where interest rates and various international markets are at. And if you did so, it would impact the return. But in the event that they need to, they'll have the ability to fully hedge that or sit somewhere in the middle. So it's really no change. It's just tidying up the SIPO to reflect what's actually been happening.
Right. Thank you. Councillor Kempton, are you happy to move the recommendations?
Yes, I am. I just wanted to make a point around JB Weir. When we recommended to Council that we should use them, it was partly because of their international insight, partly because of their modelling, and partly because they were fleet of foot. Right. Now, this is just giving them the tools to enable them to be fleet of foot. And they're just simply saying we've really got to be wide awake right now, and we need, if you like, a much greater level of immediate flexibility. So if we want to use the potential that we saw, this is a reasonable way in which to go about it. So I'm moving that.
All right, seconded Councillor Brown. Councillor Scott.
I always get nervous when the financial advisor is described as fleet of foot. but after...
Fair enough.
But the key words that jump out for me are more diversified and more conservative. Is that fair to say in terms of what's being recommended here? Because you've gone from a relatively narrow New Zealand fixed interest to an international fixed interest. You've opened up the New Zealand cash to all cash. So, like, as a governor, looking at these numbers and trying to understand what's going on, we're moving towards a less risk situation.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And it still sits within the 60-40 range with growth and... What's the other half? Earnings, no. So
income. Growth and income, you mean?
Yeah, no, on the way it's allocated. Yeah,
growth and income. Or income growth, is defensive.
Yeah,
it's essentially cash.
So that is an overall, about half and half, essentially. So reasonably conservative also, which we need to be. It's public money.
And I think, Councillor, the international cash in New Zealand, it's pretty well all New Zealand cash. There's no advantage in having cash offshore, clearly. It's really just calling it cash because that's what it is. The risk in there is the currency risk if you have cash offshore.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. Can I just raise the question of how often this policy gets reviewed?
I actually think in the policy it says that it will... Is the policy reviewed 3 yearly or is the investment manager reviewed 3 yearly? But we've quite regularly reviewed it. The last one was in 2016, so it does get reviewed fairly regularly as and when changes are needed. Yeah.
And can you tell me again why we need to bring this in the last council setting policy?
We're setting the rules within which the fund manager operates.
In the last few weeks, again and again, she highlights that this is everyone's problem in terms of climate change, and just saying that we need a financial return on investment primarily based on our financial gains for the community is no longer enough. This policy should at least have come past council for a workshop to have been discussed. We have not seen this before. This is the only opportunity that this council will have to put some sort of mechanism in there so that our financial advisors are responsible to us and in turn we are responsible to our community about how we invest their money.
Mr. Benham, are you able to
say? Just initially, I'll let Nick comment on the ethical investment issue, but I'd certainly be saying to you that these changes to the SIPO should be implemented. I think there's a lengthy period potentially for when the next council gets together. What's being recommended is a defensive and a conservative strategy, which just allows the investment manager to make some calls quickly if that occurs. So I think your issue, Nick can talk to, but I would be suggesting to you strongly that these changes to the SIPO be implemented now to allow that flexibility and defence or conservative nature to be within that to allow the investment manager to act if they need to. Nick?
Mr. Donnelly.
Yeah, so the as Mr. Benham said, these changes are more administrative than anything and allows them to manage the portfolio right now. It doesn't preclude a change in the new triennium to the SIPO at any point. And in fact, the presentation that that JB Weir gave, given that you know they've spent the last 6 months transitioning the portfolio over, this was the first opportunity they'd got in front of the Audit and Risk Committee, and it is right before the end of the triennium. So we needed to have these changes ratified so that they can manage the portfolio as they as they've outlined here. Their presentation where they gave these changes, the last point that they had on that, which couldn't be actually enacted for any change now, was that they made the note, as had been as they'd noted in the or got pointed out in the tender process, that no reference was made in the SIFO to an ethical investment policy or inclusion of ethical exclusions in the mandate. They've said we could draft an ethical policy and capture the council's values in a manner consistent with how we would screen the investments if you would like. Now, we also talked about, as after they'd presented, about them coming back to early in the triennium as part of the induction process to talk to the new council. I would envisage that this would be one of the topics that would be outlined there, and hopefully they would be given a mandate of what the new council wanted them to go away and propose or come back with the recommendations in that area. So it's not like by saying or agreeing these changes today that's done and dusted and the SIPO's locked in for the next 3 years. I see it as far from it.
Sounds good.
Councillor Brown?
Yeah, Mr. Darley basically said what I was thinking, but also, I do agree. I think there should be a conversation about ethical investments probably sometime in the new triennium, and I think it would be a great chance to get JB Weir here as well, because I was very impressed with their professionalism the other day. So it would be a good chance for them to have a talk to the new council.
Did I see a hand up there? No? Councillor Deacup?
I think you noted my hand, Mr. Chairman.
Apologies.
Yeah, by